Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is The Bad Batch Report. No, the alarms are going off. A storm is coming, or perhaps my table at TGI Fridays is ready and that little thing is vibrating in my hand in the mall. It's one of the two things that's happening.
Totally is. All of it.
You highlighted one of the great moments of this episode. I can't wait to celebrate the comedy and the horror happening in one big weird space horn blow. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and the person making the mouth noises is Ken Nabsock, and we are here to talk about Season 2, Episode 13 of The Bad Batch. It is entitled Pabu. The titles were released quite a while back, and some of them were like, ooh, Clone Conspiracy, what's that about? Pabu, is that a restaurant? What is that? A new martial art form that Wrecker's going to learn? Who knows? And we got to discover what Pabu is. Well, for one thing, it was written by Amanda Rose Munoz. It was directed by Stuart Lee, and continuing story editor credit to Matt Machenovitz. Ken, what was your viewing experience?
My viewing experience was, oh no, we got to get homework. We got to get these done because these screeners that we, I know, again, we say every week we're fortunate to have, and we really mean that, but we have them and we had to watch them ahead, and they had a timer on them. It was a ticking clock, like a third act in a screenplay. And I watched, did a first viewing of these two episodes and loved them. And I was like, great, I'll come back. I didn't realize, and you were the one who wonderfully pointed out earlier, Joseph, hey, we have to like Sunday. I didn't know it was 9 a.m. Sunday until Saturday afternoon. And I was like, well, there's my Sunday afternoon plans gone awry. I need to do this now. So I had a little tension to it, which ended up being kind of like the Pabu episode. It was a wave coming at me. And so I think that added to the tension.
It was relaxing and calm until it wasn't. Yeah, I agree. Very, very lucky to have the screeners, as we say every time, because it's worth saying every time. The only marring of this enjoyment of Bad Batch Season 2 has been this sort of weird trying to make sure that we have time to cover it at the same time as The Mandalorian. And it was great to have the screeners because then we could watch them twice. We could take our time. We could pre-record the episode and give Bad Batch all of the attention and love it deserves. And I had the same experience with these last two episodes that are available to us on screeners before they timed out. Is this one, I just was entirely in the mood after our Bad Batch recording last Tuesday, the day we record. And I was like, I'm watching Bad Batch. And it was, I watched it with my lunch. So I had a hummus wrap, some apple slices, and deep anxiety. This is a very anxiety-causing episode for me, which we will talk about. But yeah, then I watched the other episode, and then I ran out of time on Saturday. I got up at 6 a.m.
No.
On Sunday morning, Sunday, March 12th, because they were timing out at 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. And I finished desperately scribbling down some notes about, you know, some quotes I wanted to write down for episode 14 at 8:59, and then I watched it disappear. So it really was like, this is really nice to have this early access. Oh, anxiety. The storm came and it washed away the screeners. But we were lucky to be able to watch these and absorb them. And now we're going to talk about them more. So this is the first time that we have seen the next episode. We've seen episode 14. We're not going to talk about episode 14. Obviously, we do not want to spoil it for anyone. But if we do a little less guessing about what happens in the exact next episode, it's because we already know and don't want to ruin it for anyone listening. So, Ken, going back here to episode 13, Pabu, the episode we're talking about, what was your overall reaction? Love it, like it, struggle with it? Where'd you go?
Yeah, so for the first time in a while, my notes are a few days old and they were slightly rushed. So I'm going to read exactly what I wrote down. Dug it. Second viewing, evacuation is high tension. Amazing what they can do with water now, eh? There you go. That's my take on the episode. Evacuation
is high tension. That's poetry.
That's the name of my first book of poems I'm working on. I really like this episode. I really did. And this is Star Wars. This is a disaster movie, right? Poseidon Adventure, anything from the 70s, A Tower Inferno. It's all of that stuff there. I really loved it. I do understand, or I think I'm maybe not understanding. I think I'm bracing for some impact that this episode might spark some of the filler, no character development, all these kind of generic critiques I've seen lobbed at the show. And I think this episode has that vibe of like, hey, we're going off this island. We're considering a new future. We're going to learn some valuable lessons. And this disaster movie is going to erupt in the middle of it all. But where's Cody? Where's this? Where's that? And I get it. I get that stuff. But I really love that this episode forced me and maybe an audience to slow down. It forced you to look around and take stock of where you are and maybe what you want to do with your life, career, path, and those around you and the value of treasure, all those things we're talking about in themes. And then it turned into just an amazing sequence. Not that I'm rooting for anyone to, you know, disaster. I'm not rooting for the disaster. but it was so well done. And looks, as we always say, beautiful. But man, what a scary beautiful. It's amazing what they can do now. And I'm there for it. So that's my overall view. I really dug this episode because it did what I think the show wants you to do at times. Slow down and really take a look around and see where you're at.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. A ton of what you said. Evacuation is high tension for sure, but tension with purpose, in my opinion. Visually, absolutely gorgeous. You know, it's so far from the early Clone Wars animated series, which I still love because the storytelling shines through, and it was amazing technologically for its time. But, you know, you watch those early episodes and some of the animation feels like, we need to show this. Can we get away with it? Mm-hmm. And this now feels like, oh, this isn't about getting away with it. This is about showing off. Look what we can do with water. Look how much we can make you feel the golden hour sunshine on Omega's face. This is an absolute triumph of the technology being a tool to help you feel the story, to help the artist tell the story. It really felt it in this episode because you felt satiated and happy and calm. And then you felt terrified, which you should. I think I absolutely love this. We are never big on the idea of filler episodes because I think we often find that, yep, the story is moving forward. The character development is moving forward. Maybe it's not hey, this happens and a character stands up and goes, I've changed and now I'll do this. It is a little bit more subtle. It is a little bit more slow for the most part, but it's always there. And I will deeply defend this episode. I won't attack. I'll be a Jedi. I'll defend against the infamous F word of filler. I love this because it does to me what art should do. It makes you feel, if you let it. This one made me feel my own anxieties because when they landed and it was great, and there wasn't an imminent problem and everything seemed like it was good. Obviously, story-wise, there is just the tension of, well, we know this is a story. There's going to be a conflict. Where's it going to come from, right? But it made me feel like this is really nice that they're having a good time. And it is making me so nervous they're having a good time. I would have felt less anxiety if they were being attacked by Sidious himself because conflict's happening. Okay.
Yeah.
And it really, I feel like I do sometimes when I'm on vacation or when I'm suddenly having a good time and maybe revealing too much. Like sometimes after like a stressful day, my wife will make a nice meal. We'll sit down. We'll really just be enjoying a show. And about 15 minutes in, I have to pause the show and just go to her. It's like, this is okay, right? This is okay that I'm relaxed and happy, right? You know, I think we're all dealing with a lot of stress under being a lot of tension, and you can have that weird sensation of when it's gone, it's almost more tense because you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. And this episode made me feel that kind of anxiety in a deep way. And I think it's what the Bad Batch is feeling too, of like, is this possible? How could this be possible? You know? Mm-hmm. And I think that was not just the story of this episode. It's the ongoing story of the Bad Batch. And it is the brilliance to me of the placement of this episode. We've gone through some extremely dark and difficult episodes, including the Outpost, including what the Bad Batch goes through in the Zillow Beast episode. And, you know, the absolute horror from poor Omega of like, it ate the crew. This reinforced this sort of big picture idea of the show that that Tech and Omega discussed explicitly in the mining episode, that there is still light in dark times. There are a lot of bad people out there. There's a lot of people taking advantage of other people, but there's still light in dark times. And in Pabu itself is like, hey, look, we gathered up all these refugees. And we have built a place of calm and community and peace. It's advocating what Tech and Omega were talking about of like, yep, but there are people like us too who are doing right and helping people. So I think it tied to a lot of the big picture ideas of Bad Batch, which we will get into in more detail. It really picked up on a lot of the specific themes developed throughout the season of explicitly of what is treasure, who can be trusted. Is it okay if I expand the definition of my identity? Is it okay for me to try new things? Is it okay to be more than just a soldier? All those ideas were at play here.
Absolutely. A lot of big things going on there. And I'm with you on the tension and it, you know, it almost is like, yeah, again, you know, you're not watching a, you know, documentary on Pabu and everyone's just going to sit there and have a great time. You know, something's coming, of course, but I had Empire in my brain. You know, I had, they're going to be found out. And then when it was nature, when it was something that you almost can't stop, but you must survive. And I went to go back to write down the name of the little creatures and I forgot. So I just called them monkey doos, but I know that's not right.
It's pretty close. It's Munoz.
Munoz. There we go. Such a great moment there. We talk about that. It almost had some Raiders of the Lost Ark bad dates moment to me of just like them kind of, tipping you off to something coming. It worked for me on those levels. And I thought it was both this high tension, as I said in my notes, but really beautiful, not just how it looks, but a beautiful episode. There was a beautiful soul to this episode that I loved.
It was a beautiful soul, and it was like, does the Bad Batch deserve peace? And I feel like the answer is like, yes, we all deserve peace. I also think that was one of the really great tensions of the episode. I definitely want to talk about the what the storm means and the choice mm-hmm. to have it be something natural. But I think one of the other tensions that I felt as I was watching it, which gave me anxiety during the beautiful parts, was it felt like it was going to be an episode where it's a story that I think we've all seen a lot of, the kind of the grim, dark story of the tortured heroes try to find some peace, but they bring violence to the peaceful place. It follows them. I was waiting for, you know, Sid to betray them, or for there to be a tracker or whatever, and for them to be like, we brought the Empire here. And maybe that'll still happen down the road. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But I really love that in this episode, it was not the Bad Batch who brought the horror to the island.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Great point.
All right. Well, let's dive in more to the big themes, the ideas at stake in this episode. Where did you go with your big picture thought?
Well, I guess we could start with the continued lessons on what should be valued. What is treasure? Great line from Fee. Treasures can mean many things. And of course, right? Of course they get that. But I think this tied into connections. It tied into just the people of Pabu being from a lot of different spots too. I really like that thing. I definitely don't think you would think this too, but think this at all, but like, you know, none of them were running, right? None of them were hiding from the fight. It was like you said, it was a certain kind of peace that I enjoyed that they even addressed, like, what happens if the Empire comes here? We'll deal with it. We'll figure it out. And I liked that angle too, adds to kind of the bigger thing, but that it just highlighted connection for me, which just runs all the way through, because danger will find you, unfortunately, maybe potentially, and maybe with them, but and you can't change that. It's not quite Shmi telling Anakin, you can't change things, but you can't stop change. But helping others, helping communities, helping those in need is always going to be the way. And it's always going to be on your heart, which also might mean maybe for the Bad Batch, this is an idea that they have of like, maybe here is where energy is. And maybe that's enough. Maybe that's our part, or you know, Echo, it's a choice to go deeper into the galaxy, deeper into the fight. Maybe this is our fight. And I don't know if any of that's answered. But I just like those thoughts. There's a lot of ruminations on that for me. I was at that table as well. Like, I didn't even think, and again, I'll kick that back to you, that idea. It wasn't like Hunter was like, fine, we're camping out here because we're done out there. It was something about here, drawing mm-hmm. them here, and that maybe they're needed here. And there's some of those things going through, or maybe not. Maybe they're pushed out and everything. But that ties into the choice to have it be nature versus the Empire, like you said. And that's why I'm on that kind of train of thought.
Yeah. No, I really agree with you. I think that, you know, this community is special. This isn't a place to hide, right? Mm-hmm. Hunter, I think, has always been really clear about, my mission is to just survive, to just keep Omega and our squad safe. If we're not soldiers anymore, I don't want to be a mercenary. I have all of these values and these lines that can't be crossed that he demonstrated throughout the season, but really in the Gungi episode. And this is a place that reflects those values. Mm-hmm. I think for me, the way that I looked at the big picture of this episode is the idea of fulfillment, aka the real treasure. So not just a place to hide, a place that fills our souls. Mm-hmm. Everything about what Pabu is a Star Wars theme statement of what is good, what people need, what the light side is, right? Mm-hmm. I love looking at the lessons of the light side in the dark side of the Force is not just a blue lightsaber versus a red lightsaber, but right. they're beliefs and values that are being upheld or attacked.
Yeah.
In this, that island is not in a, it's not a Vergence in the Force, it's not Mortis, but it is the light side in terms of the values, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was community. There was people working together. The people there were sharing and welcoming. They were stronger together lifting one another up. Everyone had value. They were connected to both nature and acknowledging the power and the fear and the bounty of nature, but they were also connected to technology. They weren't just living in the past, but they were also very connected to the value of culture, the value of knowing your past through those artifacts that were being celebrated. You can kind of talk about some of these beats in more specifics, but it was kind of this laundry list of what Star Wars is always promoting, and all of it was here on this island. Wrecker says, you know, kind of shocked when Shep is friendly to Mr. Inta. Do you know everyone here? And Shep is like, of course, we're all like family. Liana says about the space monkeys. They're called Munoz. The elders say they've lived here since before Pabu was inhabited. There's that sense of connection to the ancient, connection to history, respect for the elders, respect for the environment, but they're also not lost in the past. They're moving forward. It really ties into this treasure idea, which was so clearly teed up in the first episode of the season, the first two-parter, where Omega was just really thinking brutally of just like, my family needs to survive, and in order to do that, we need to fight for money. And then the nice man, Romer Adele, I believe, yes. Romer Adele on Sereno, the idea that, hey, you're a child, play with toys that has value too. It gets supported again on the Discovery and Exploration episode with Fee, where Omega is really learning that just going after something, learning about it, being curious about it, that is a treasure as well. And it's also got this hanging question of like, who is Fee? Is she kind of full of BS when she's calling herself a liberator of ancient wonders, right? Or right. Is she a little bit of a scoundrel? In this episode, answers it so definitively that there's this Archeum there. You know, and Tech says there, my analysis indicates this so-called artifact you recovered is of very little to no monetary value. And Fee responds, treasure can mean many things. Most of the villagers on Pabu are refugees. Many items I recover are remnants of their cultures, and that's worth preserving. It's a definitive answer that she isn't Hondo, right?
Yeah.
She is somebody who values community and values all of the emotions that can be attached to an object, right? So all of it gets to this idea of this is a beautiful place. This isn't just a safe place. This isn't just like, hey, they're nice to us and they have food. Right. This is about values, which I think goes to what you're talking about of Hunter being like, this place makes sense to me. This place has values. Yeah. This place has a wider definition of treasure than is this something Sid can sell on the black market?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And him asking that fair question of is perhaps this what we've been looking for, right? And again, the bigger question of the galaxy and plugging in, maybe it's fair to poke back at Hunter on that too, if this is where he decides. But it's just like looking around. I like what you're describing, because again, it's not just this safe haven. We're all hiding out here and don't want to get involved. This is totally different vibe. And to say it's the kind of the end of this journey that this episode, this season has been going on. We got a few episodes left, of course, but I think you're so right to go back to the beginning where it was just so clear of what Omega was looking for. Cause again, the money was needed. The money was a reality. The money's always a reality. Of course. But when you start dig deeper into what you want to be, your identity, what you're here for, it all kind of makes sense as Omega grows up in front of us.
Yeah, and I think that's the reason that I would really push back on the naughty filler word is that it ties to what this season has been explicitly building of this question of what is treasure. But it also ties to the general question of the Bad Batch of like, well, you're not soldiers anymore. The government that you fought for was a ruse. And who are you going to be now? Who do you want to be in your souls? There's the functional, how are you going to survive? But what is going to become of you? Who do you want to be? And that's been raised even more with the episodes in this season where the clones have been vilified by Palpatine, and they're being, all clones are having their identity, their purpose taken away. And this is answering that question of who do we want to B, there is life after being a soldier, possibly, and we're finding it here. One of the things that I thought really supported that is it's a light touch, but there are moments of the treasure of fulfillment for each individual member of the group. It's mm-hmm. they're each highlighted. The group has, you know, some fulfillment in that they might not need to be soldiers forever, but their skills as soldiers clearly have value. So that's nice that they get that that whole validation of actually being soldiers. Mm-hmm. But the idea that they can experience more, live more, have more to offer than just being soldiers is great, and a great contrast to Sid, who sees their value only as soldiers, right? You know,
completely.
It's been 20 rotations and no word. You better be dead because your absence has cost me a few scores, she says. And that's such a contrast from what Fee is telling the rest of the Bad Batch about Omega, of like, oh, she's got the whole soldier thing down, but don't you think she should learn some other skills?
Yeah.
Funny joke from Tech of like, what other skills? But it's reflecting the themes in that riot racing episode with Tech, where he realized like, oh, my skill set is my skill set. And it doesn't mean that I just have to be a soldier. I can do other things with my skill set. So fulfillment for the whole group as, yep, your skills have value as soldiers, but also as many other things like, hey, members of a community and fulfillment for the individuals as well.
Yeah, no, I love highlighting that Tech line, which I'm sure we'll talk about, but just from that point to, you know, they have not known any other thing, but they've been picking it up along the way, and you know, take that to wrecker fishing, you know, just finding a new way forward. I like all that there. And the opening sequence it's really great. It almost has some Club Obi-Wan vibes too. But I love that because you're talking about Fee and what it means for her to really get it's such a scoundrelly pirate bounty hunter-ish kind of opening sequence. And then for her to be like, yeah, I take these things and I go here.
Yep.
Amazing reveal for me.
Yeah. Working with shady people, mm-hmm. constantly can't trust anyone, death everywhere. Everyone assumes it's just, you know, you're pillaging these things for financial value. And that it does give a big punch to like, look at the huge contrast between this and that bar they had the fun bar fight in.
No, which was fun.
It was very fun. We talk about it a lot when we get to the action section. In terms of the kind of look at the fulfillment of each of the characters and see what your thoughts were. It was really set up in this episode that Omega needed connection to people her own age. Fee's quote of she needs friends her own age who don't share her genetic profile. Right. We see her building on the lessons that Romar Adell taught in the first episode, that there are many kinds of treasure and that the idea of just watching a sunset, being on an ocean like the one at home, except for it's not violent and roiling all the time. Right. It's at least right now. That connection with Liana Hazard. I love that their name is Hazard, but it's pronounced Hazard in the episode. I think I thought this in the treasure hunting episode that with Fee. In the middle of the season, that Fee was kind of this interesting, healthy maternal figure for Omega, along with her 18 dads. So I felt like Omega was having all these fulfillments of just being a kid. She has a friend her own age. She gets to enjoy playing. She gets permission from dad to play. She's got a mom figure. It was just such fulfillment for Omega.
Yeah, I this idea of earlier Omega growing up, but she needs to live a full life and you can't simply protect her or hide her. There's some protection this episode, but I don't think it's the whole story there. And I think that's goes into the bigger themes of who you are and the identity of it all. And what she's emerging from. I love that scene of, you know, I used to be raised by the ocean too. Not the same way.
This is a little prettier. We haven't seen any beautiful sunsets on Camino. Maybe they happen. I don't know. And then for Hunter, man, I think we talked earlier this season that it's kind of Hunter was kind of stuck. We weren't sure, you know, when he was going to have some epiphanies, some changes, some challenges. This was great for Hunter in that I feel like in a lot of ways, all he's ever wanted is a safe place for Omega, right?
Yeah.
And to be able to move from just a protector to a true father figure. That was a fulfillment I sensed for Hunter of like, I can just actually be her dad, you know? Omega's just very, they're a family, childlike when she gets invited to go out on the boat and says like, can I go? And Hunter cheerses with his space coconut drinkware and just says, have fun. I like that made me tear up a little bit because of how deeply Hunter needs that. Right. When was the last time he was able to say to this child that he's, you know, twisted himself in knots to protect, to go like, sure, go crazy, have fun.
Yeah. And again, and then this question of what is truly endgame for them?
And, yeah. You know,
yeah, and again, there's bigger problems. We're not done. The fighting's not done. We the rebellion's some years off. I know Luthen Rail thinks he started right now, but there's some time to go. So I understand that. So I'm not advocating that Hunter just packs up the guns and heads home. I don't know if that's the case, but it's just like, you know, looking out at this, why wouldn't you think this is what we're fighting for, including the people of Papua?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know that it'll be, trying not to say anything about future episodes, but yeah, I just didn't perceive that this episode was in any way guilting the Bad Batch for like, this is turning away, right? This isn't Cassian going, I'll find someplace warm and safe, right?
get you some pieces, yeah.
Yeah, and running away from, you know, his problems, yeah, to just get arrested outside of Space 7-Eleven for doing nothing. This is the galaxy is awash in horror, and right now most people are just trying to buckle down and survive and look toward what's next, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's also different because this is the story of soldiers who have known nothing but conflict.
Yeah.
And there's that, to me, it's more about discovering a place where like, this could be our home base. We could take a breath. We all deserve this. And there's nothing in this episode to me that's about like, and if a call for help comes, we're not leaving, you know?
Right. Fee heads on out, right? It's not like it's not in the unknown regions and you can't track it or you can't get there. Like, you know, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this also isn't an episode of like, oh, it looks like this community is great, but there's actually a dark side of like, you know, if this is Walking Dead, this looks great. And then we find, you know, where they store the humans that they eat and they're cannibals or weird cults, you know, like, nope. It just, this beauty exists and they deserve to be a part of it or at least consider it is what I took from it.
Yeah. Mr. Enta didn't go to his hut and start secretly contacting Palpatine, his old high school buddy, you know?
Yep. His old high school buddy, which is what I appreciate about this episode, that it wasn't something like that. So in terms of other characters' fulfillment, you know, I thought this was really interesting that, Tech had this opportunity to explore other sides of himself that was highlighted. He has a connection with Fee that clearly Wrecker thinks is maybe romantic, which you can talk more about. But I think that idea has never occurred to Tech. Maybe he's throwing some body language that Wrecker is picking up on, or maybe we haven't seen that, like, you know, in between every flight, saying statistics he's learned about Fee and her adventures, and Wrecker's like, damn, I don't know. Yeah. But that was clearly going on, this idea of, oh, I could experience beauty in a different way. And when Fee specifically grabs him and says, hey, look at when the sun goes down and all the lights come on, and it says pretty spectacular, right? And Tech says, I suppose that is one way to quantify it. It really is about that invitation to explore other sides of himself, right? Of like, these are parts of you too. If you're not obsessed with just being a soldier and just being on a mission, what else could you, how else could you be fulfilled?
Yeah, no, it plays well for comedy. We can talk about that, but I really love what you're saying of you know, the old writer should write the other side of the page or live the other side of the page. And sometimes you forget that and or you don't know that. In Tech's case, this is all he's known. I think it connects spiritually to all the stuff we talk about in the Book of Boba Fett of I was imprinted this way. I was raised this way. Society sees me as this way. This is all I think I know to be. How do you change? Do you fight it like Chrysanthemum? Do you embrace it like Boba Fett? Do you struggle through it? But here it is in a completely different way. tech, you know, might have a nice romantic date on Upper Pabu. We don't know. But he would never stop to consider it. He doesn't. He literally says that in the beginning of the episodes.
Right. Yeah. We've never needed anything else. What other skills are there to, it's totally normal to just be raised around people who look, who share your genetic code. You know, why do you need to know people of different ages? What's that about? Like, yeah. And then he's open to it. Right. And he sees it and experiences it and gets to feel it a little bit. And then even Wrecker, I mean, I think there's a real light touch, but I think it is so purposeful that they each kind of have a moment where they're expanding into something that that we know they're interested in and get to feel it a little bit more. If this is an episode about the treasure of fulfillment, Wrecker's treasure is super literal. He's literally satiated, right?
Yeah.
He says, I'm full. I'm never full. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a fun, straightforward thing. But the deeper thing with Wrecker, I think, is the joy of seeing people who are like him. Wrecker is loud and gregarious and happy to shout and interact. He you know, he really responds to Wookiee culture because that's a loud, gregarious culture where you loudly burst into the room and express what you're feeling. There's that great beat where he does the big handshake with Shep.
I love that beat. Yeah,
right, because it's like somebody who maybe kind of is closer to my build.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who is also loud and happy to see people and will do a big handshake like that. And then, you know, it is, to me, writerly on purpose that Wrecker's the one who is amazed to see community, amazed to be in a community where, like, everybody knows each other. So I can walk around and go, hey, buddy, to everybody. And nobody will go, who are you? Why are you happy?
Yeah.
You know, the fact that that's his mission is to carry Mr. Inta, the symbol of everybody knows each other and everybody's kind of loud and joyful about it. That's fulfillment for Wrecker.
Completely. The unbridled joy, the fish sequence, everything about it. I really like what you're saying there. For my guy Wrecker, to find a place where you belong, and that reminding you of your value and everyone else's value. All of this kind of spiritually connects. I'm not saying it's completely, an overt connection, but to the spirit of the Aki-Aki stuff, where Rey's kind of just seeing the joy in the galaxy that maybe she hadn't seen before. She wasn't allowed to see before. It's a hand in the rain. It's a smile at a young child going, here's who I can be. Here's what is at stake. And here's where I want to be. I'm not saying she wanted to move to Pasana, but in this case, it's the same kind of joy to me of the actual joy in the galaxy, of the actual people and why we're fighting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think Pabu is a picture of a place that would be lovely for lots of us to live, but I really appreciate the attention to detail that the specific needs and wants and concerns of the Bad Batch as individuals is also highlighted for Omega to get to be a kid the way that Hunter and the Wookiee Elder sort of were sad that she didn't get to be, right? Mm-hmm. That Hunter gets to just be a dad who can fulfill his primary goal of protecting Omega, that Tech can value all of his skills and see that they don't limit him. In fact, they can expand what he can see and enjoy, and that Wrecker gets to eat a lot and hug people. Individual fulfillment for all of their needs.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. You know, I know he enjoys punching people too, but he doesn't have to here. It's something different.
Yeah, exactly. So now that we've talked about the joy, should we talk about the horror?
The horror. This is, I'm not a huge, growing up near oceans, I avoid them. Big bodies of water. And nature is too powerful. So this episode scared me.
I want to get into the storm and what we think it sort of means and how it functions. But how did you feel about the first half of the episode? I went on and on about my anxiety. Did you feel anxious? Were you waiting for the other shoe to drop? How did you feel before the storm came?
100%. But like I touched on earlier, like, had to have been the Empire was going to come out of hyperspace, had to have been the attractor, had to, you know, pirates or something would have fallen. Fee wouldn't have been enough for me. I just had that idea of, like you said earlier, they're going to bring it, or more of the, you know, lessons of the oppression of the Empire. We get to see that stuff, and we see it wonderfully explained time and time again in other places. So I liked that the moment I heard the rumble, it was something different. And that's going to, you know, danger's going to find you. That's just life. And I deal with it. So, yeah, I was waiting for the shoe to drop. And when my monkey deuce, my yo-yos, Munoz, whatever, you know, making up a Periubu, great band. When they started reacting, you know, you always watch those animals. We live in earthquake country. Got to watch those dogs and cats. They're doing weird things. Tape some things to the wall. So then it hit, and then the anxiety was, it paid off, I guess.
Yeah, the anxiety paid off really, really well. Because, yeah, there's that part of me is like, oh, please don't be, you know, V-wings.
Right, yeah.
Storming in to attack. Please don't let it be, you know, a Star Destroyer, you know, in the atmosphere. I really, really liked, because it's what made this episode beautiful. If somebody asked me to define the Force and the balance of the Force, I'd be like, hey, there's a lot of ways to do that in Star Wars. One of them is you can watch the episode Pabu of Bad Batch. I think it's very meaningful that the Bad Batch and the audience are both nervous that the other shoe is going to drop, right? Mm-hmm. We feel like Hunter, like, can we relax? Can she go on the ocean? I guess she can. I love the idea that you can't just have paradise. Life isn't that simple, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. And this was a great way to show that without being cruel about that, to be natural, right? This is the balance of the Force in nature. Nature is beautiful, peaceful. There are beginnings, but also sometimes it's destructive and sad, and there are endings, right? Mm-hmm. This is the natural balance of the Force. So the light side and the dark side exist. Balance in the Force is not sometimes going to be kind of benevolent. Sometimes I'm going to choke people I don't like. That is not balance in the Force. That is taking light and dark side actions. Balance in the Force is the reality of the speech that Luke gives in Last Jedi. You know, birth, death, you know, beauty, beginning, cycles, right? The ocean is bountiful and gives to them, but the ocean's going to do what the ocean's going to do sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think that was deeply powerful because it is a reflection to me of the philosophy of Star Wars, of the light and the dark side in the balance. And it was just so fresh and surprising that instead of a person, a being making a choice, which is the way we often see the dark side represented in Star Wars, is that somebody put the Force out of balance by making a choice to do something aggressive and cruel. Sid putting a tracker on them. Turns out Fee was double playing them and betrays them. You know, the Bad Batch accidentally brings the Empire there, etc. It being nature is just a different story and a different supporting of this light side, dark side, natural balance philosophy.
I agree with you in a big way here, and it takes you through some of my thoughts here of this episode, but also the overall conversation. And it's funny too. In the past, I think for me to boil it down in my brain, sometimes when I talk about balance and the Force and how Star Wars explains it, Last Jedi stuff really comes up obviously a lot. But I always, even for myself, off air, think of a tidal wave coming, and that might be someone trying to take the dark side in a direction that overcomes the light, right? And can you stand in the wave and help? Now, I want to also legally say, don't ever stand in a way of a tidal wave, folks. Okay. But that's how I look at it. I always look at it like that, right? It's a wave. You stand. Qui-Gon's going to stand in front of that to defend the light from those who would take the dark and unnaturally move it into the light. So I had, even when this started, the Munoz did their dance and got out of there and all the stuff and the tide receded. I thought, yeah, all right, is the Empire's tidal wave 3000 ship at the end of this? Is, you know, is there some kind of reveal on that? And it wasn't. It was just what you're talking about. And I don't, also, by the way, this isn't something that jumps out to me in my first viewings. This is why I encourage folks, if you got the time, watch it a second time. Or if you got a moment, think about what you're going to say about these episodes. I think that kind of, if you're just watching, well, nothing happened. The Empire wasn't there. The Tidal Wave 3000 ship wasn't there. So this episode was filler. Like that's kind of where I want to fight back against that kind of talk on other podcasts and other shows. If you don't like the episode, that's fine. But I think about what this is. It's a rumination. It's a reflection on all the things Star Wars talks about. I really agree with you on that. And through that comes value. And what happens when the wave hits? because it isn't the Tidal Wave 3000 ship behind it. They find a way to work together to save each other. They find ways to this isn't working. We got to go different ways. We can go into those details there. And it's what the galaxy has to do and what they maybe have to do as well.
Yeah, no, I really agree with you. And I think this is, to me, why it's valuable to watch Star Wars in any entertainment that you choose to with a why mentality. Mm-hmm. I don't think everybody needs to have their notebooks out and mm-hmm. you know, you don't have to just be a casual viewer. You can be a casual viewer and you can watch it and you can like it or not like it and pay as much attention as you want. I don't ever want to like shake my finger at people and like, you should all be writing essays every time you sit down to watch something. But I don't think this one requires like super, super analytical. It's literally the calm before a storm. We all know the conflict is coming. So when you are watching an episode where the conflict is being withheld, to me, it's just natural to go like, well, why? We know conflict's going to come. What source is it going to come from? Because that's going to tell us what this episode is about. To me, that isn't really like, you know, I studying James Joyce and cracking a code, you know, it's it's just asking why. And I think that there's so much beauty in the fact that it's just a storm because it's a different story. It's a mm-hmm. story that reflects the Star Wars attitude toward the light mm-hmm. side, the dark side. Star Wars is always really great to me about it promotes kindness, empathy, the light side, valuing nature, valuing history, mm-hmm. working together, all kinds of stuff that I think sometimes we can be resistant to in storytelling because it sounds so simple, right? Mm-hmm. It sounds so quaint and kumbaya and, you know, oh, we can solve all problems by holding hands in a circle, right? It can sound mm-hmm. really cheap. What makes it powerful is when those values are put up against real high stakes and real horror, right?
Yeah.
And something as devastating as we've got this beautiful, peaceful community. We've got an early warning system that should work. And we haven't had one of these surges in 3 decades. It should be fine. Like, yeah, well, sometimes it's not. Sometimes life isn't fine. It's actually kind of a brutal message, right?
Yeah.
And that's then throwing that darkness into it is what makes the light and the beauty shine to me. And I love that that's what's going on in this episode. I also just really think it ties into some of the ideas that they've been building in the rest of the season. I'm really obsessed with the crossing episode for lots of reasons. But it really was that message that impacted me that, hey, it's a dark time in the galaxy. The Bad Batch doesn't know exactly how they're going to survive, where they're going to end up. And Omega says, well, but, you know, we'll all get through it together. And they stare at that storm that's coming from them. Mm. And we reviewed that episode. I kept saying both sincerely and kind of jokingly, they live inside a storm. We all do, you know, trying to accept that things aren't going to be perfect. What we need to do is figure out how to live our best lives while, hey, sometimes you're suddenly in the middle of a storm and you got to deal with that. Yeah. That was a somewhat metaphorical idea. They were literally watching a storm come. Here it is explicitly. Here's that same idea explicitly. Everything is perfect. Wrecker is full. Maybe Tech can fall in love. Hunter gets to be a dad. Maybe he's going to start making dad jokes. Everything's great. Oh, no, it's not.
No, it's not.
We got to deal with that, right? So that gives it this beauty. Mm-hmm. And then I love exactly what you're saying is it's this natural calamity, but they face it with the tenets of the light side, right? Mm-hmm. If that storm is, it's the dark side. It's the dark side of nature that there's violence, there's destruction, there are things outside of your control, right? Mm-hmm. They can't stop the wave. They don't try to stop the wave. All they do is work together quite explicitly to preserve and defend life. And then make a kind of a solemn oath to work together to rebuild.
Yeah.
And none of it, and it's not an inclusive community. You know, almost lots of other stories where you had Upper Pabu The people in Upper Pabu might not care about the people in Lower Pabu, but it is just an actual geographical distinction, not a value distinction.
Yeah.
You know, Shep saying we got everyone out in time. That's what's important. We will band together and rebuild. And again, it's not like everybody's like, oh, who cares? They were just houses. We see people like weeping and injured, right?
Mm-hmm.
They all lived, but it was something to live through. It was hard. It was awful. Yeah. But through these tenets of the light side, they're going to pull together and deal with it and cope with it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm thinking too, it's like, you know, I always want to be careful. You know, you can pull things too far out where I'm like, I'm not saying that one, I think they should, the Bad Batch themselves should not get involved in the bigger picture, or that there's not the bigger picture to worry about, or that sometimes you shouldn't punch the tidal wave. I just really like what you're saying about this episode, how it was played out, how nature was there, reminding us of the darkness, and everyone was saved, right? There was no tragedy in terms of loss of life. Mm-hmm. Everyone was saved. How they did that. The why, of course, there, but the actual how they came together to do that and then sticking around to fight it. Then you look at what's going on in the galaxy. It might be a big, giant, overwhelming tidal wave, and maybe some are more capable of punching back. Maybe some are more, you know, again, Luthen's over there going, I got a plan, I'm broken, my soul is broken. He's got that. This is not necessarily everyone's call, and the story of the Bad Batch isn't done. But I like that it's a reminder of what you're fighting for. Again, I keep going back to that. This community, the people around you, the connections. And there's a beauty in that for me. As you go out in the galaxy and decide the why, but also how you're going to do this and what's at stake. How far do you want to go? How far is enough? All those kind of things. I don't know. I just look at it as a real microcosm of the bigger fight going on.
Yeah, no, I really agree. And I think, you know, that Luke Skywalker attitude of it's all so far away from here, right? Like,
yes,
he's being asked for help directly, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The reality of his abilities and his power and his relationships are finding him. Obi-Wan is directly asking him. And he, in his heart, wants to go, right?
Mm.
And he finds reasons to say he can't, right?
Right.
That's a different story than, hey, everybody's suffering. We found a community that also needs our help, right? That's similar to Ahsoka's sort of Jedi epiphany of like, if there's a problem somewhere and I know it's going on, I should probably go there. I'm not going to put my head down and ignore it. But also, if on the way to that problem, I encounter somebody who needs help, I just help them. That's what a Jedi does. They help people, right? And there's that sense of that here for Bad Batch of like this kind of unbelievable community is like, this is a place for refugees. We welcome anyone. We probably ask that you try to you know, help out in the community. We want everybody to help out to their abilities. But hey, you're welcome here. And then I think that's the other thing that I love about the storm and that it isn't a sort of grim, dark, whoops, we brought a bunch of stormtroopers, you know, pew, pew, pew.
Mm-hmm.
That it's even in the darkness, there is fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
I would say in the first half of the episode, they all get to experience this other side of themselves that they've been too busy running and shooting and trying to just survive to get to explore too much. And then in the second half, it is a celebration of their skills as soldiers still have value, and it makes a difference to this community. They were welcomed with open arms and they can immediately give back, right? Tech, you know, getting the ladders down, you know, Hunter being able to save Omega and Liana, Wrecker being this big physical presence, all of them just sort of like organizing the rescue and making it happen with their skills. It was also an opportunity to show that the Bad Batch have value as soldiers. Those skills that they have as people, because they were soldiers, have value, but they also deserve to be more than just soldiers.
Yeah. Deserve to be more than just shoulders.
Shoulders and hips. They deserve to be both body parts.
Yeah, my shoulders are hurting today. That's what I'm thinking about that. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Any other big picture thoughts?
No. It goes into what I loved about this episode is you know, again, I think it's all in there. I think it's all in there, subtext and text, but it's just this episode made me think of Star Wars overall. And I love that. When it just gives me a chance to reflect on what Star Wars the franchise is generally talking about the hope versus fear, the hope over fear, the hope, finding hope in fear, and how that word fears means a lot of things. Sometimes it's a tidal wave. Sometimes it's a man in a dark robe with a red blade, but there's fear. And what are you fighting for and why? It's a big picture thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And it is just such a celebration of things that Star Wars values, you know, community, not just being welcomed and helped, but then also trying to be welcoming and helpful in return. That artifacts moment is just huge to me, that like these people have built a new community out of communities that have been shattered, but and they value this community of the present, but they also value who they are and where they came from and the kindness of going and getting relics of different people's cultures so they could still feel connected to the past. You shouldn't be absolutely chained to the past, but the past and where you come from matters. That is a big, beautiful idea, and all of it is a big sort of essay on on Star Wars values, and then also really picking up on all the threads of the Bad Batch and paying attention to each individual as a character. Like so many episodes this season, it's very minimal, it's very direct, but it also has great depth.
Yeah, I really agree with that. All the slow moving character development maybe that you thought in the past is all kind of coming to a head.
Yeah, and who knows? Maybe we'll discover that on the other side of the planet, the Empire does have a mining operation, and they're causing the surges.
Hey, maybe. The story's not done yet. I want to be clear. You could be right there.
Yeah, and I also don't. I think the way that the surge is presented right now is that sort of truth of like, hey, sometimes nobody did anything bad. A volcano just went off, you know. But that also doesn't mean that, hey, you know what, maybe Bad Batch season 4 is they build a dam or whatever, a better early detection system. You know, I'm not saying like, yep, yeah. And that's just the price of living there. Every once in a while, let the ocean roll over you.
Yeah, indeed.
It's more that, hey, there's a crisis now. We got to deal with it. We got to accept it. We can't stop it. How do we work with it?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we are going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk some action, some comedy, some canon, all that in a moment.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter.
Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And we are back to talk more Pabu. Season 2, episode 13 of The Bad Batch. We're going to talk some action moments. There was a fun, exciting action scene at the bar. And then, hey, you know, the ocean attacked them. So what moments did you enjoy?
Again, the opening sequence with this character, Crowder, I said earlier, Club Obi-Wan vibes, not beat for beat. I don't even necessarily think it was, hey, let's do a Club Obi-Wan from Temple of Doom. It just had that, you know, you're sitting across the table, you're trying to double cross each other. There's someone watching. I loved it. It was a lot of fun. Omega right there, front and center. Love when she pulls the bow out. I really loved the sequence there. I think my favorite part was Wrecker standing up, cracking the neck, ready to fight.
It was a good cheering for the Bad Batch moment of like, you should have brought more muscle. Like, they did. What part of your body are the cracks coming from? Neck? Knuckles? Somewhere else? Absolutely great.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing, again, the purpose of that for me, again, is showing a lot of things, especially with Fee, but, you know, this could be every episode and every moment of the episode, right? This could just be what it is. And I'm glad it's not. And so it highlights the importance of the scene and the fun of the scene.
Yeah. And I love that. It was a good setup also just kind of for Omega that, like, it really did feel like Fee's like, oh, I'm trying to teach her things. Like, in this world that we travel in, you can't teach her things without having her in bar fights.
Right. Yeah.
Is a good contrast to what she experiences on the island. I really liked Hunter's knife throw. This was kind of a great Hunter episode where we kind of reconnected to that real basic Bad Batch. Like they're the best of the best and they each have their own unique skills. Right. And Hunter's knife throw was really great. I like the entire little Omega sequence that really had the great sort of bar fight vibes when she does the slide over the table and tips it over to block the blaster bolts and then shoots the large light fixture onto the villain. That was just some classic stuff.
Oh yeah, that was I love that sequence. Yeah.
Moving into the action of the island, I really did love when Hunter senses what the Munoz sense.
Because you forget he's kind of got that stuff, right?
He's a tracker and he has that sort of a sixth sense of being connected to nature, which is just such a Star Wars idea, right? That the natural is there and that there are things that we can sense from it. I love that the Munoz are there at all, right? That like these people are living, you know, in harmony with the beings that, you know, the creatures that were there from time immemorial, and also just that like a valuing of nature that that everybody's like, hey, everything's great, and the Munoz like nope. Yeah, I mean, I it's been a long time since I've lived with animals, but I still remember like both my Chihuahua and my Nico and my beloved cat Sam just like, hey, we're watching television in the summer in the Twin Cities and it's sunny out, and they're suddenly like just kind of stand up and get uneasy, and like seconds later you hear the rumble of the thunder and they you know.
We're talking about earthquakes earlier, but that would work for that.
And you know, sometimes when there's been tornadoes in the Midwest, the sky, you know, I've seen the sky turn this weird sickly green, and like the cat and the dog always like always you look at them and their eyes are like, human, do you know the sky is green?
Can you see the sky is green?
Do something. So it was a great highlighting of Hunter's skills. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. God bless those monkey dudes. I'm going to, you know, maybe we need monkey dudes in Star Wars because the Munoz were great, but now I want monkey dudes in my brain.
Yeah. Get that hashtag started. What were some other action moments for you as we go into the storm?
I love the tech using his ascension gun in that sequence there. You know, Phantom Menace fans unite. Love that. And you know, again, in this disaster film type of setting that's going on, our man Tech, man, he knows how to do this stuff. He ain't just a bookworm.
That's right. Yeah, no, I really love that moment. It was definitely Phantom Menace ascension guns, but tying all the way back to, like, I mean, I think I learned the phrase grappling hook, you know, when probably one of my second phrases I learned from Luke and Leia swinging. Mm-hmm. And that it wasn't heavy handed, but it did kind of continue this thread of what is there between Tech and Fee to have that kind of classic, you know,
yeah,
let's grab one another and swing up this rope.
Yeah. That's important. It's important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any other action moments for you that you really liked?
I think just a lot of tension, as we said earlier, but with Omega and Leanna out there, and the rescue and everything about that, I'm going to imagine it's one of those moments where, like, hey, I'm sure it works out good. Right. Right. It's got to, but the terror, everything about it, the hunter, we're in trouble. Like, I loved everything about it. It just added to the whole sequence there. Again, Star Wars doing disaster. We talk about Star Wars doing horror and Western and all that kind of stuff. Well, this is a straight up 70s disaster film.
It really is. Yeah, that's a great point. And I like that, you know, that Leanna was kind of showing Omega some things that she doesn't always get to experience. And then Omega, like the rest of the Bad Batch, is like, you know, one of the things I know how to do is run from danger. And I love that when she's like, yeah, you picked her up and like, we got to keep running. Mm-hmm. Final beat for me is, you know, pretty straightforward action beat, but I love Wrecker grabbing Shep's hand. Shep almost doesn't make it over the wall, right?
Yeah.
Because it does reinforce this little bond connection that they have. And it's also yet another, like, specific skill of Wrecker's strength, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Helping to save the day, save the community.
Everyone has a part in the story here.
Any other action moments that you wanted to share or highlight?
No, which seems weird to say for an episode that did have a lot of action in it, but focused on the other areas. But it's just these wonderful, wonderful sequences all the way through.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into comedy, whimsy, and weirdness. What did you like here?
I liked the Bith player trying to steal credits at the end. and the subtitles identify him as, like, Bith game player, whatever it was. It was funny. Love that there. Tech only playing against himself as a challenge was great.
Yeah. Yeah. I like really like both of those beats. The Bith was fun. I hadn't noticed. Was it Bith Gamer?
Bith Gamer. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah.
I can't remember.
Bith Gamer on Twitch. Follow him. Yeah.
Yeah. Follow the Bith. I liked Omega's real bright to the baddies in the bar. She's not a pirate. She's a liberator of ancient wonders. Great callback to that line and a great reminder for us to go, like, that sounds like BS. You know, we have begun, you and I, our discussion of Indiana Jones. Mm-hmm. And that is such a talking point in our culture about many stories like Indiana Jones of, hey, it's one thing to just discover something buried. It's another to say, where does it belong? Who does it belong to? Am I actively taking it from a specific community? So that I love that line is set up again so that we can find out, like, oh, wow, it's true.
Yeah.
It's just such an Omega line to be like, I have really, she's a Fee fan, right? She's joined the Fee fan club.
Yeah. Yeah. And I am too. I think I've loved it so far. Fan of Wanda Sykes anyways, in real life, but as a comic, but I just, this episode, it all kind of came together with the banter and everything, but just who she is, the reveal and where she goes. I just loved it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of great tech lines, like you're saying. I really do like that one. The yes, I am playing against myself. It is the only time this game is a challenge. great, mm-hmm. funny tech line. And hey, nice to know that Tech Chats with Gonky.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, gotta love our guy Gonky.
Yeah. And then we talked about this line a little bit, but I wanted to highlight it as comedy. When Fee says about Omega, she needs friends her own age who don't share her genetic profile. Text mm-hmm. deliberative. We never had such a thing. Yeah. It's such a like kind of old man kids these days. Like, mm-hmm. what do you mean helmets on bicycles?
We didn't do that. Yeah. No, there's a ton of little tech. I do not see the issue. Fee, no kidding. Fee, do you have a plan? Hunter, you're looking at it. A lot of great little beats there.
Yeah, absolutely. What other ones jump out to you?
So Mr. Enta, Steve Blum voiced him, just a laughing old man. It tickled me. I watched it a few times of just, that's literally all he does. It's like, well, okay. I love that. It was just so silly to me and glad he's all right. I was worried about him.
Yeah, no, me too. And he's yet another picture of a sort of a value being shared, that a community takes mm-hmm. care of their elders, right? Like, it seems like maybe he's not entirely sharp, right? Of like, mm-hmm. he's not hearing the warning signs or the ocean, yeah. and just like, doop-a-doop-a-doo.
Yep, totally.
Yeah, I loved that weird delivery. That was so funny. And the whole mm-hmm. thing, all of Pabu in the first half, it really reminded me of some of the Legend of Zelda video games when you visit a community before Ganondorf gets there and ruins everything.
Yeah, yeah, which was the worry, but yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I liked Fee's line about what's happening on Pabu or what happens, at dinner. Lots of food, drink, general merrymaking. You'll probably hate it. And then there's a real quick shot of Tech looking sort of confused and offended of like, I don't hate those things.
Yeah, no, I love some of these moments of even Tech with the stuff with Fee, where, you know, Tech's probably got these. I mean, just, I don't know, he, you know, what do I do with that type of vibe with the Fee stuff too? It was really fun. It's well played. As always, they handle the Tech character so well.
Yeah. And this was another Tech line that I really liked, is a super funny line of Wrecker saying, I'm full, I'm never full. And it's a funny line as well as a meaningful mm-hmm. line. And Tech saying, I will note the date and time to commemorate such a momentous occasion, is normally a kind of straightforward sarcasm line, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think there was anything sarcastic about it. I think he pulled out the data pad to sincerely do exactly that.
100%.
That's general merrymaking for Tech.
Yeah.
I only have one more moment of comedy whimsy weirdness that I enjoyed. Did you have any more?
No, that's kind of, I went to the Wrecker stuff there. I did the Wrecker to Tech. We mentioned earlier, you've got some competition. I just love the beat played out really well.
Awesome. Yeah, the last one for me, we also talked a little bit. I don't know if it's intentional comedy, but it made me laugh in a dark way of Shep saying, we haven't had a sea surge in 3 decades. If we were at risk, the early warning system would have activated and interrupted by terror was a great little beat there for me.
Indeed.
We are going to move on then to canon lore connections to other stories. Not a lot of of specific stuff. You know, this wasn't, hey, there's Palpatine in this episode. But you know what? You know what great Star Wars canon and lore and connection to other stories I thought there was, Ken? Refugees. In a large galaxy, there's always going to be a crisis. But the idea of refugees has been placed in Star Wars, you know, a lot. It's in Attack of the Clones, Anakin and Padme are on a refugee ship, I think the Gerindian Valley. So even in the build up to the Clone Wars, when there's a little bit more crisis, there are refugees. There's a lot of stuff with Leia and Padme trying to help people in books. There's a point made in the Clone Wars animated series that it isn't just the violence in the Order 66 that's Palpatine spreading the dark side. It's that this war that doesn't need to happen is causing pain and suffering everywhere. The episode Assassin, which is one of my favorite Clone Wars episodes, it's about Ahsoka dealing with the vision that Padme is going to be assassinated. But the thing that's actually happening in the episode is that Padme has asked Bail to go to Alderaan for this conference on trying to address the massive refugee problem caused by the Clone Wars. And this ties into all that storytelling when Shep says Pabu has been a safe haven for those to flee their homes during the war and others mm-hmm. after. So directly acknowledging like, hey, some of these people got their planet destroyed by General Grievous, right?
100%, because we're not far from that. You know, we're not removed from Clone Wars much.
No, so it's a direct connection to the politics and the sort of galactic galaxy building of the Clone Wars. And I felt like there was a little weight in the way Pabu said others after, like, and it's still happening because we've seen that in the Bad Batch, right?
Yeah, 100, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So any thoughts on that big canon connection?
Well, it's just an important tool to the overall story. So yeah, no, absolutely. It's there. I think about Attack of the Clones a lot, just what that means. But yeah, no, I, in terms of this being a series that deals with the fallout, I love when that kind of stuff comes up.
Yeah. And then this is not immediate canon. This is looking ahead and kind of looking at the shape of what the Empire is. The Bad Batch are rightfully concerned because they haven't seen anywhere in the galaxy. Almost everywhere they've gone has had some sort of horror that is happening because of directly the Empire or people emulating the mm-hmm. Empire. And they find this beautiful haven and say, hey, aren't you worried about the Empire and showing up? And Shep says, well, why would they? We're a remote island with limited resources. So how do you for yourself track that with the history of the Empire? By the time we get to Andor, you know, he says we'll go somewhere warm and safe. And the picture really is, yeah, there's not anywhere warm and safe. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of... Do you think that the Empire eventually spreads literally everywhere, or do you think that Pabu could in theory always be warm and safe? If Andor had just found Pabu with the entire rest of the story and the fate of the galaxy changed?
I think it's look at it Star Wars in that way. I think it's very possible. I think also I was thinking of in my rewatch of Kenobi, there's kind of this, you know, 10 years in and one of that citizen of Mos Eisley just tells Reva, you don't have any jurisdiction out here. This is the Outer Rim. And so there's maybe that always that kind of political battle, right? We see it with the New Republic. We see it in the Mandoverse. We're too far out here. So it's possible that something like this could slip through their fingers. But what I've kind of, especially at this point, and I'm not saying the mayor of Pabu is wrong. I'm just saying you're a year or two in, check in 5 years, check in 10 years. When suddenly, you know, Palpatine's like, I'd like an island retreat to go to. Is there anywhere we can take? Let's find it. It's a big, giant galaxy, and the Empire's, you know, fingers are still slowly reaching around the galaxy's neck here, right? So I see the tidal wave a little bit, too, of, again, the potential of danger will find you. The Empire will find you, which is why I like the mayor saying, hey, yeah, and we'll deal with that when it happens. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but
yeah, no, you're right. That is really important that he says, like, he's not saying it's impossible. He's just saying, like, we're not a high priority target. We're remote and we're not sitting on a dunium mine, you know, like, of course they'd be here if we were, right?
Yeah.
So unless they discover that the fish there can power the Death Star, they
right, are. Or Palpatine wants some pet Munoz and where do you get them? Like, you know, anything, but it potentially could happen.
Yeah, so I really like that you're highlighting that Shep says, like, and we will do what we always do. We'll come together as a community and we'll try to find an answer, right?
Yeah.
I kind of like that the story is maybe there are pockets of places that can be warm and safe, but they do diminish as time goes on, as you're saying, give the Empire time. Mm-hmm. And that sort of Star Wars idea that, well, okay, maybe a small amount of people found somewhere safe for now, but none of us are safe because, you know, Palpatine's glowing yellow eyes are casting everywhere. And if it gets out that this is a place for refugees, mm-hmm. it's probably going to get swarmed as the Empire makes more and more places unlivable. And that's going to bring it to the Empire's attention.
Yeah.
You know, what if one of those artifacts that Fee liberated is something that that Sheev wants for some reason? Mm-hmm. Then you're not, the second the Empire decides you're not safe anymore.
Yeah, because I even had this little minor thought when the Marauder's flying in. Where it's like, they're all looking up, and I wonder, it's like, how often do ships come and go? Feek seems to come and go. How much do they have a handle on it? So that, and this is the beginning of the episode, too, where you have this slight worry of, well, you know, do they see this often, and are they worried of who's coming? So I don't know. So I could see the Empire finding it eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. So it will be interesting to see as time rolls on. Only other things for me, the creature that is released to attack Fee, I don't know if it is a Kuhun, like the creature that attacks Padme and Attack the Clones, but it was very similar and it made me happy. How did you feel about it?
It is. I looked it up, I think there's a subtitle that pops up real quick. That is, it screeches or something.
Ooh,
listed as that. Yeah. It's one little beat, easy to miss, but yeah, it is. And you know what? A fun callback. There you go. Attack the Cloners.
That's so great. I love that Star Wars is big and wide and varied. So like, hey, a lot of different ways to assassinate people. But if it is something that people like, yeah, there's a pretty good way to assassinate people. I'm glad we saw it more than once.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm glad we've never seen one complete its job, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That would be a tragedy, but maybe we'll see that. Speaking of something that we did see, they love using that Aqualish that has the blue and green, the blue and orange outfit that the original Walrus Man action figure did. I love seeing that Aqualish again. And imagine, it's like, is that just Aqualish fashion, or is there one Aqualish who keeps being in the background of the Clone Wars and Bad Batch?
I can go both ways with that. I like that it was the style at the time, or just, you know, he travels a lot.
It was the style at the time. Any other canon or lore stuff that you noticed?
No, I think that was pretty much it for me.
Yeah, I liked that there was a couple like, oh, wow, we recognize that from here, but also a little bit more that bigger picture evolution of the Empire kind of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Was there anything in this episode that you disliked or questioned?
No. I the episode hit me in a good mood in a good way, especially the first viewing. And then I had a thought of like, okay, I experienced that episode. I might be good on it if I'm doing a rewatch, you know, it's like, it's a little quieter. I get it. But then I watched it that second time and I just really like it. It affected me again. And I just like what they did with it. The two halves of the episode work so well together. So no, in the end, I understand. Again, I'm waiting for some of the conversation out there, but we don't have to gauge with it. There's no point even me complaining about it. I just want people to enjoy this episode as much as I did.
Yeah, absolutely. If people, you know, didn't enjoy it, fair enough. That's just fine. If people look at it, every idea in it and still feel like, yeah, it's a little slower, I want the plot to move faster, fair enough. I think for me, I really valued it because it so explored what the Bad Batch needs. Beautiful picture of the natural balance of the Force in action. A community making great choices, and also just it made me feel what the Bad Batch feels. This whole season has made me feel, and them going through such darkness, us as the audience going through such darkness, and then suddenly getting this burst of possibility of, you know, fulfillment, satiation, exploring romantic feelings, being a kid. It felt beautiful to me.
Yeah. A glimpse of a possible future.
Yeah. I will say it isn't disliked. It's a question. I really like the idea of a connection between Tech and Fee. I think she did give him, you know, I think she did nickname him Brown Eyes in Entombed, but I would have taken a little bit more setup, you know. You know, when Wrecker first said you got some competition, it felt a little bit sudden, right? I think I would have maybe liked a little bit of a hint of a glance from Tech at Fee or asking a question. It was a disconcerting feeling to be like, Wrecker picked up on something I didn't. It gave me more respect for Wrecker. Wrecker's really paying attention to body language.
Exactly. Let's look at it.
Yeah, I love it, but I would have taken, you know, they've been doing an amazing job of setting everything up and paying it off. I would have taken a little bit more setup on that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on?
No, I think it's all there.
Yeah, I think you alluded to it earlier. The only other thing for me that was also a little devastating about this episode is the existence of Pabu. It made me a little frightened halfway through that there might only be two seasons of Bad Batch.
Yeah.
The the question for so long has been, who are they going to be? Where can they go? They kind of had this unsteady alliance with Sid, but they didn't really like it. Then the Marauder was home. But even that can be taken from them. Who are they going to be? Where are they going to end up? And the fact that the show, you know, with only a few episodes left, is offering us a place where we could put a bow on the story of the Bad Batch for now. Their story isn't over. Who knows who Omega grows up to be? You know, who knows if Wrecker's around a tree on Endor? Who knows, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But for now, this could be a happy for now ending. The fact that that's in play at all has made me concerned that there are only two seasons.
Yeah, yeah. There's some other things out there. I think the answers might come soon. Not talking about announcement of a show at Celebrations, but like the final three episodes. But yeah, I'm with you. I want 3, 4, 5 seasons. I'm hopeful. But even just we haven't the lingering Cody, where Cody goes off. The fact that Gunji was a one-off, a one-shot, so to speak, that he's not now part of the crew and everything. It's not. It just kind of showed me they're not picking up a bunch of all-stars that are going to go fight this part of the rebellion at this point in the timeline. Yet again, this is open speculation that you and I are kind of sharing right here, right now. That maybe that wasn't the point, right? This is more the point, the thematic journey that this gang is on. This Bad Batch. It might be maybe different than we expected. Versus, you know, because even Rex and Echo are off. You know, Echo's like made his own decision. He must do what he feels is right, of course, and he's over there doing, and that's his part of the fight. And now here, so we'll see. I'm with you.
Yeah, I do think that they're, you know, even going back to the first season when they encounter Saw very early on, right? Mm-hmm. And Saw's like, drop everything and fight, right? I understand how the question can be raised or make people feel like this is the story of how the Bad Batch joins a version of the Rebellion, or right? A cell that eventually becomes a Rebellion, because we know the Rebellion doesn't just start, right? Mm-hmm. Cells come together is the story. But yeah, you could look at the Bad Batch and go, is this going to be a story of how this group comes to be an early cell of the Rebellion? Or is this a story about how these individuals, these beings, were created for war, created for a purpose, had that purpose taken away from them, exposed as a lie? Mm-hmm. And how do they find peace in this traumatic period? How do they get on their feet so they can be in a place to help people down the line? Mm-hmm. And if it is more that story of surviving the initial trauma of the creation of the Empire, then there is a possibility of wrapping up.
Yeah. Yeah. We say with the big word, unfortunately, over it. But, and again, you and I had this conversation. I think the rampart of it all, of kind of removed from the board, and there's no follow-up yet. And I know that's some of the stuff people want, right? They want those, give me the answers, the big connection, where we're going with this. And I think sometimes an episode like Pabu is where we're going.
Yeah, questions. And you know, the introduction of Hemlock in, there's some potential there. If you could have a figure or merch of any character or idea from this episode, what do you want?
I think it's Mr. Anta. I wouldn't want to mind a plush Munio, but I don't know. He's such an interesting little one-shot little character there. Just shows up giggling. Maybe you have one of those old figures where you pull the string and he just giggles.
I absolutely love that. I want the Tekken Fee awkward romance 2-pack. They're in the package together and they're just their eyes are painted to be looking at one another. Just a little side eye. Mm-hmm. Either that or a Munio storm alert system for myself that I can, you know, put outside with those little Munios on it, and the wind comes through and like makes a horn noise. That would be great too.
That's awesome. Love that.
All right. Any other thoughts, or should we wrap up?
Let's wrap this one up here. A lot on the table though.
Yeah, so where can people find us?
Hey, friends, we are at Force Center Pod on Twitter. We're on Instagram as well. You can find some reels and shorts and all those good things on our YouTube channel as well. follow us there, subscribe, figure fights. We've got, like I said, shorts, essays. You want more in tech? Joseph's got a great essay in tech out there too. Check out our YouTube channel. And you can find us on Facebook at Force Center Podcasts. We're available in a lot of different spots podcast-wise. Just search, you'll find us. And you can also get merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center, or you can go support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center, which includes, new merch tables. We got a new goal set there as well. So head on over there if you'd like to. You can follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, kennapsok.com, for more information. And where can they find and follow you, sir?
You can follow me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Mastodon. Just look for Joseph Scrimshaw, at Joseph Scrimshaw, on all those places. If you want to check out some of my short films and comedy stuff, you can go to my YouTube page. Just search for Joseph Scrimshaw as well. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for the Munoz that let you know a storm is coming, this has been The Bad Batch Report.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.